Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, helping victims of trafficking out of the darkness, what Catholic nuns are doing to make a difference, and Christians from Nigeria come to Rome on pilgrimage with the help of the city's vicariate. They're lured abroad by visions of prosperity, by hopes for a better future for their kids and families back home. Sometimes they're trying to escape war or conflict. Some 12 million people around the world today are believed to have become slaves for those dreams of a better, safer life. But their number could be even double that, as many as 27 million men, women, and children to live in a state of modern slavery. People like Tara from Ethiopia, promised a good job as a maid in the Middle East, who finds her passport confiscated and 20-hour days of humiliation and hard work. Or Umma from Somalia, who spends her last pennies for a boat ride to Italy, only to find herself an unwilling victim of the sex trade. Or Nobin, a fisherman from Bangladesh, beaten by his boss when he fails to meet his quota of catch for the day. Well, among the growing number of lay and religious organizations combating these forms of human trafficking is the Catholic International Union of Superiors General, or UISG, which in 2009 instituted the International Talitha Kum Network to train consecrated religious and lay in methods of prevention and assistance for victims of trafficking. I spoke to Salesian Sister Australia Castellone of Talitha Kum. She says the network takes its name from a center for trafficked girls that she helps run in her native Philippines.
Many times you get exasperated with their manifestations because sometimes they manifest their depression on what happened. But we are always pushed on by the words of Jesus, which says, she is not dead. And Jesus himself raised this girl to life. So we take that as a message of hope for every trafficked girl, that no matter what she went through, it's not the end. She could be raised to life. So we take this word as our own to nurture our hope and desire that every man and woman and child who will be and who has been victimized by trafficking persons could be raised to a new life, could be restored to the dignity of the child of God that he or she is.
Talitha Kum is not just a name, Sister Australia tells me. It's the spirituality of hope that guides the sisters in their work.
There is hope for everyone who has been dragged into this circle, this criminal circle of trafficking in person.
Through their many hospitals, schools, and social centers around the world, Catholic sisters can play an important role in combating and preventing trafficking of persons and offering material, spiritual, and psychological help to victims. And in the 68 countries where it's located, Talitha Kum is training more and more religious for the job. It's a job, Sister Australia says, that puts us in touch with all forms of poverty, the material, the spiritual, and the moral.
In our mission, we touch with our own hands the horrors of trafficking in persons, talking to especially women and children, because UISG is for the women congregation. The training course is aimed at enhancing the capacity of the sisters to address the issue and to maximize and share the resources which religious life has, because we have resources that can be put into action. One, such as we have structures, we have schools, orphanages, hospitals, clinics, social centers, and this could be very well, shall we say, put at the service especially of victims and of the vulnerable persons first. And the other, the educative institutions are very effective venues for the prevention and awareness raising about this phenomenon.
While poverty is a contributing factor to human trafficking, by no means is it the only one. With more and more people migrating, the very concept of poverty has changed. Being poor today is not what it meant to be poor yesterday.
Now, poverty per se, as we say it, the material one, is not a cause, it's a factor that affects the spread, the unfolding of this phenomenon. Because right now, for example, there is material poverty, but there's also what we call the moral poverty, virtual poverty, whereas once upon a time, a person who has a house, a family, a piece of land to till, this person would not consider himself poor, and we would not consider this. Instead now, with this boom of migration, with human mobility, they compare themselves with others who maybe have members of the family in other countries, in prosperous countries, who could afford some luxuries. And so the values shift. Whereas the basic, the fundamental value of family and human relationships and community, sense of community, people are ready to live these values in exchange for material comfort, you know, a more comfortable house, the amenities of modern technologies. And this is one of the hooks of traffickers.
Here in Italy, there's quite a large Filipino community.
Yes.
And many of them are working as domestic helpers in homes and so on, or taking care of the elderly. And you hear so often stories of exploitation of these people who, you know, their employers are not treating them fairly by European standards. You also hear of very tragic stories of women, for example, who've come over from the Philippines and they're here for years before they're even able to get their papers in order. And they finally arrive at getting their papers and find out that their husband and their children are no longer there or no longer waiting for them. So these are really touching issues which people don't often think about.
This is what I was talking about. When you look at poverty, it's not only, we don't look at it only from the point of view of lack of material goods or material values, because there's a shift to this. In exchange for these material amenities, you have the crumbling of family values, for example. They say they come, they migrate, they leave their own country for another prosperous country in order to provide a future for their family. But when they go back, the family is not there anymore. This is what I mean to say by the other side of poverty, which seems that migration, this going to another country, would improve their lot. And yet, the phenomenon is complex. We cannot, in our work, we cannot take full hold of this reality. And this is why I am really very sold out to this idea of partnership, of networking with other sectors of the society.
To reach out to more victims of trafficking, Sister Australia and her fellow religious have established partnerships with other sectors of society, including NGOs and governmental lay institutions and networks. These have included the International Organization for Migration and the U.S. Bureau of Population, Refugees and Migration.
These things, for example, will help us for a more effective service delivery. Partnering, for example, with IOM, they are in many countries. They have their offices there. They have mechanisms, machineries, and data about migration, which we share. And from the social point of view, they also have this flow. How is the flow of how is human mobility, for example, from Africa to Europe or from Asia to other parts of the world? And this way, we are informed first, and we can strategize our moves, our intervention.
You're talking about partnerships, but prevention is also such an extremely important part of it. How do you prevent women and children and young men from falling into the trap of human trafficking?
This is one of the skills we give during our course. We discuss with them three types of prevention: the primary, the secondary, and the tertiary. The primary would be, this would be more on awareness raising. This would be to give them enough, you know, prevention means to modify behavior or situation in such a way that the possibility of this contact with traffickers would be lessened, if not avoided. And then in the secondary prevention instead, if there is this contact and there is already this plan or the decision to leave the country, we give secondary prevention in a way that we give information on safe migration, the legal, shall we say, legislations addressing the issues of migration. This is where IOM helps us a lot. And partnership with legal agencies could help us a lot, you know, like assuring that certain recruiting agencies are legal and recognized and accredited by governments, because this is very important in the secondary intervention. And we inform them about proper documentation. You see, people are could be sometimes deceived. They say, okay, we get your working permit when you reach the country. But we tell them, we give them, we conduct seminars for living nationals when they have to go. The tertiary is a bit, this is where we have to enter, because the tertiary is you prevent further harm for those who have been victimized already. And this is where we have shelters, we have halfway houses. These are part of our mission now. After training courses in many places, centers or shelters for trafficked women and children have been put up by the sisters.
And this is all over the world?
This is all over the world. We have 20 members in 5 continents of the network.
How have you seen your work change the lives of women?
Well, for one, I think that the very first, the most impressive for me is the awareness of women about their own dignity. That nobody has the right to inflict harm on them. Because sometimes, many times, they blame themselves for what happened to them. Yeah, because I'm too ambitious. I was the one who dreamed of going away. But this does not excuse the traffickers or the criminals from taking advantage of their weaknesses and their dreams and shatter even this wholesome dream. So that's the first one. And from this awareness of their own dignity, I see that there is the empowerment. So their desire to improve their lot, their desire to do something. And here we are partnering with the other industries and agencies on providing for them healthy, shall we say, income-generating projects, giving them skills so that they can find a fruitful employment.
In their own countries.
In their own countries. Mm-hmm. In their own countries. At the same time, there are also among our members, for example, USMI in Italy is one of our members. They are working, they have advocacies on how to secure a better status for women who have been rescued from traffickers. You know, like, because many of them don't even have the passport. Sometimes the passport is the wrong name with their picture. So this, shall we say, securing a status, at least that they exist as persons. This one, for example.
What are your hopes for the world tomorrow?
You know, if we'd say that to see an end to human to trafficking in persons, maybe this could be a utopic hope, no? But my hope is that more and more would take this challenge, to put our positive energies in addressing trafficking in persons. That they would become aware and becoming aware, the indifference would lessen. Because many times, you know, when things are worse, they would suddenly wake up. I did not know. I seem to see her sometimes all full, all black and blue, but I did not know that she's being maltreated, you know, neighbors like that. Is that to for many more persons to join this pool of positive energies and network against this trafficking in persons? I would say, I used to say this to the sisters, trafficking in persons is a criminal network. To counteract this, we should put positive energies for a positive network of counteracting.
Do you think governments are doing enough? And also, I've noticed there's more of a push to get the private sector, businesses involved in preventing human trafficking.
One of the things that I see as a sign of hope is that more and more governments have come up with anti-human trafficking laws. And we saw this, that in Africa, more and more countries have come up with anti-trafficking laws. The problem is the promulgation, the actualization. Well, you have, for example, in our country where the anti-trafficking law has been since 2003, out of more than 3,000 cases presented to the court, there were only 19 convictions. So the law is very, very slow.
Sister Australia and her companions, working for an end to human trafficking, share one conviction, that every man, woman, and child is a child of God with an inherent human dignity.
We are all creatures of God, created in His image and likeness. And if we look at each other with this dignity, we cannot trample upon anybody. And therefore, we work so hard, we commit ourselves, so that this dignity could be promoted, and for those who have been so destroyed, that this could be restored to them. And that more and more, because it doesn't matter whether what your faith is, this is basic. This is basic. Not all of our girls are Christians, but they are persons. We address that point of God, which lies within them. And this is where we preach the news. What's the news? God loves you. I think this is the beautiful news of evangelization. No matter who you are, no matter how you believe, God loves you. And I am a bearer of this love.
Sister Australia Castellone of the International Union of Superiors General and its anti-trafficking network, Tale Te Cum. The Christian pilgrimage tour operator Opera Romana Pellegrinaggi, or ORP, of the Rome Vicariate, has teamed up with Nigeria's Christian Pilgrim Commission and Italian authorities to bring thousands of Christians from the West African nation here to the Eternal City. ORP organizes not only tours of the Vatican and Christian sites in Rome, but pilgrimages to the Holy Land and to Marian and other shrines across the Middle East and Europe, and tours following the trails of missionaries to the Far East. While with the aim of promoting understanding and peace between people of different cultures, the pilgrimages are geared to deepening pilgrims' knowledge about the roots of their Christian heritage, while offering spiritually uplifting moments for prayer and reflection. The Nigerian Christian Pilgrim Commission was set up in 2007 as a governmental agency to organize and facilitate the movement of Christian pilgrims from Nigeria to holy sites around the world. Executive Secretary of the Commission, John Kennedy Opara, told Vatican Radio his office tries to ensure the safety of Nigerian pilgrims from the moment they leave their country to the day they return home.
Everything about our pilgrimage program come from the Bible. You know, when we read the story of Paul, Paul was a Jew. He did all he could in Jerusalem and moved on to Greece, Corinth, Thessaloniki, and finally ended up in Rome. And so this was where he was beheaded. And then for us Christians, that's a complete circle. So we decided that our pilgrimage would be incomplete without ending it up in Rome. And it's been quite exciting. People are willing, and if most of them are buying the form, they're excited to come to Rome. And not only that, they will be privileged to even have a papal audience where they will see the Pope. And for us, it's a kind of completion of a circle. And we are very happy, and we look forward with excitement for that.
In this interview with Emer McCarthy, Mr. Kennedy clearly feels that religious pilgrimages strengthen the spiritual and social values of all those who go on them, something he sees as key, with tensions high between the different faiths in some parts of his country.
Have you already, therefore, been to Jerusalem and Greece? These are other areas where you go on pilgrimage.
Yeah, Mr. President, as soon as he was made the president of Nigeria, he did tell me that we need to expand the scope of the pilgrimage. And that's why we brought in Greece and we brought in Rome. And we have already been to several, all our pilgrimage activities were just only to Israel. Then later we extended it to Greece, Corinth, Thessalonica, Athens. Then now Rome. And we're already on it. And I can tell you, as I'm talking to you now, more than 4,000 or 5,000 Christians from Nigeria have already been to Rome. And more are coming in a few months' time to be able to come and experience this special pilgrimage program by the Nigerian Christian Pilgrimage Commission.
Now, this, of course, is not that all 10,000 are arriving together.
Yeah.
These are basically just you're facilitating Christians who want to go on pilgrimage to Rome.
Yeah,
is
sure.
that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, Nigeria is a very big country. So we have 36 states plus the federal capital, FCT. So the Nigerian Christian Pilgrim Commission coordinates this movement and the activities. We interview the pilgrims on behalf of the embassies. And the federal government takes responsibility of these people that are coming on pilgrimage and to ensure that they will visit the Holy Land and come back safely. So it is our responsibility. And everyone coming from Nigeria is under our care. And we work in partnership with Opera Romana Pregnanaggi, Vatican. They have been so wonderful. And the Italian government. We have a wonderful collaboration. And that has really helped us in being able to move the Christians to Rome.
Why this focus on pilgrimages? This is something very unique. A government that actually gives incentives to its citizens to go on pilgrimage. Why?
Thank you very much. You know, a morally sound society will be able to help the government of the day to achieve its aims and objective. In other words, the government must be able to take full responsibility of the welfare of its citizens. Now, where the government is not interested in the moral, spiritual aspect of their citizens, then they cannot get the best from the citizens. In other words, no matter how good, no matter how well packaged your program is as a government, if you have people who are not interested, who are not morally sound, who are not spiritually sound to be able to fit into your program, no matter how hard you try, you can never achieve it.
In a press release hailing the agreement, ORP stated that every year the Nigerian government encourages and gives economic support to its citizens on the pilgrimage because religion teaches man to live with the objective of pursuing the common good, and this constitutes the basis of every democracy.
We must remember, of course, that Nigeria is one of the biggest and most populous nations in Africa. The continent that John Paul II and Benedict XVI have described as the continent of hope.
Yes.
Nigeria really is one of those countries which is a motor for Africa. But these pilgrims are not just Catholic Christians. They're from across the denominations. Isn't that correct? Making the pilgrimage together.
Yes. You know, we preach ecumenism. If you come to Nigeria, we have the National Christian Center where all the Christians worship. You have people from Anglican, people from Catholic, people from Pentecostal, everybody. Our message is that the message of hope, the message that we have only but one God. We are serving only one God. The mode of worship may differ, but the truth of the matter is that we are called upon to live as Christ. You know, like Mother Teresa will always say, the greatest disease on earth is not HIV or tuberculosis, but lack of love. We try to preach love among all the Christian groups. We try to bring them together as one. And when they come, you see, even when they come to Rome, they are not coming as Catholics. They are coming as Christians. And they see the Holy Father as a holy man of God, the man that is standing as a representative of Christ for all of us. And we always encourage as Christians to say, look, this is something that we must appreciate God as in the life of the Catholic faith. So I want to say that ours is more of a unique thing. We try to bring everybody together under one umbrella. Because on the last day, God is not going to ask us, are you a Catholic or are you an Anglican? He will ask, how have you lived your life? Did you live as a Christian? Are you able to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ? Did you live like me? That is the message.
We must remember that Nigeria is also in a multi-religious country.
That's correct.
So the government putting this emphasis on pilgrimage for Christians, is it the same also then for the other religions in Nigeria?
Sure, sure. You see, to start with, the Muslim Commission was started before the Christian Pilgrimage Commission. So the Muslims, they started the pilgrimage before us. And the government gives the same encouragement to the Muslims the way they give to the Christians. Even though we have a Christian president, even when we had a Muslim president, it was the same. Because they are very, very careful. Nigeria is a country that you must respect the religion of all the groups so that you can have peace in the country. So they give the same incentive, encouragement to the Muslim the way they give to the Christians. And all we are doing is that we want to make our country a peaceful country. We want to make Nigeria a morally sound nation where people will be proud of.
What are your hopes that the people will bring back from these pilgrimages, from their experiences, from this deepening of their faith, be they Muslim, be they Christian, be they animist? What are your hopes that these people will bring back to be able to help forward a society that we cannot deny, where there has been conflict between people of different religions?
Thank you very much. It is my hope that these people, when they go, they will have what I call divine encounter. They will be able to be touched by the things the Lord Jesus Christ did, by the things the apostles did. They will realize that, look, these men lived their life, walked like any of us, and they were able to live a very good life. Then there's nothing that should stop us from living like them. Indira Gandhi once said, I respect Christ, but the problem I have with Christians, their lives are not Christ-like. So my message is that people should be Christ-like. Before we go on pilgrimage, maybe we have lived our kind of life, no problem. But then when we visit these holies and see that Jesus actually walked here, it brings a message to you. And you are now moved to say, why don't I do this? And then you ask for grace, ask for enablement to be able to live the life of Jesus Christ. And when you see the way the apostles lived, like somebody like Paul, he was on the other side. But when he had an encounter with Jesus, everything about him changed. He stood for Christ till his dying moment. And that is what we are preaching.
And to come to Rome and meet the Pope.
Yes, and when they come to Rome, they will meet the Pope. Remember what David said? David said, blessed is the man who is on pilgrimage. And I'm happy that each time we come here, the Holy Father gives us the opportunity of having a papal audience. And we are spiritually encouraged and strengthened.
John Kennedy Opara, Executive Secretary of the Nigerian Christian Pilgrims Commission. That concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.